It is now time to introduce our AA speaker, Dave C. from Woodland Hills. Welcome.
Dave C., alcoholic. Thank you, friend. That was awesome. I dabble a little bit in Al-Anon. Thank you, Diana, for asking me. Doug and Sam for coming. God, I hope I'm a good speaker, because look what you guys did to the last guy. June 2nd of 2000 is my sobriety date. The Burbank Group is my home group, sobriety capital of the world. How many of you are pissed off right now? Okay, only one? That's not too bad. I'm on a good start. I got sober in 1993, and I managed to put about 18 months together. The Burbank Group, old timers there, there was a lot of blue hairs and a lot of old guys, kind of like me right now. Doug, look like Doug. They weren't so friendly, they weren't so nice. They practiced tough love. There's kids in the room, so you're going to have to read my lips. They used to say, hey, go empty the ashtrays, or go shake everybody's hand, or, you know, and it's like, so I thought that was my name for the longest time. God dang it, it's time to wake up. I work graveyard, so I apologize, that was my alarm to wake up. I've only got a couple hours of sleep, so if I don't make sense, just go with it. My sobriety date, I said, my person Lynn gave me this shirt. You know, one of the things in here, I'll get back to that part of coming in, is that, you know, you can't choose your blood family, but you can choose your AA family in here, or your Al-Anon family in here. And welcome to the newcomer in here. It's all about you, at least for me. It's all about you. You're the most important person in this room tonight, even though I think it's me. Diana's my sister from another mister, and we share a lot of similarities and people and a lot of tragedies, and I'm going to try not to, like, tear up and cry, because there's been a lot of tragedies over the years. And I've met some beautiful fucking people in AA. Sorry, kids. Beautiful people in AA. Probably nothing your mom and dad haven't said that you've heard. Uncle Dave has potty mouth. So, in 1993, I knew I had a problem. I wandered into the Burbank Group Alcoholics Anonymous. I was drinking and using with the person that would become my sponsor's stepson in his house in my buddy Terry's bedroom. And we're drinking and smoking crack in the bedroom through a can. Who smokes crack through a can? Oh, nice! I'm not alone. I thought I'd be the only one, so... I did a lot of drugs, but alcoholic at heart. I started drinking at the age of 12. I would go around, my dad was an alcoholic. My dad passed away with over 40 years of sobriety. My mom never claimed to be, so she kept right on with my dad, so I'll just leave it at that. I would steal the drinks and stuff, and everybody go, oh, look, the little Davy's cute, you know. And then by the age of 12, I knew where my dad kept the booze, so I would start stealing his vodka, because he didn't drink vodka, and I'd fill it back up with water. So my dad's friends probably thought he was cheap as hell. And by the age of 13, I was doing methamphetamine and cocaine, and I was off and running, smoking weed daily, drinking daily, any chance that I could get my hands on alcohol and or whatever you had. If you told me estrogen would get me high, Let's go. I'm also addicted to pain. I fall asleep in a tattoo chair. Don't know how that works, but I do. So there's a lot of young trauma growing up. I was wound tighter than a golf ball. Severely ADHD. Anybody else hold back in third grade? Me? Only me? We got two over here? Okay, cool. I'm in good company. That broke my heart, and that just nailed home the fact that I was broken. There was something wrong, and I'm stupid. And I believe that for the longest time that I was dumb. The truth was, is I'm really smart. I just learned differently. And back in the early 60s, they didn't know anything about ADHD. You know, so they didn't know how to teach kids. Teach over here. I'm sure she knows how. So I got held back in third grade, and it was all downhill from there. By the time I got to junior high school, I was drinking daily, cutting class, just one of the bad kids, one of the kids you didn't want your kid hanging around. But I had this sweet, innocent face, so they'd always go, no, not Davey. He couldn't have done that, and I got away with it for a long time. So by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous in the Burbank group in 1993, I was really broken. The first thing they did is they hugged me. What the hell is this all about? Because we were in a huggy, lovely kind of family, and then they were all smiling and chanting, and I thought, for sure, I'm in a cult here. I'm going to be passing out flowers at the airport. Remember? The older people probably remember the Harry Carries, and they would pass out flowers at the airports. That's what you guys were going to do to me. But I had nothing else to do and nowhere else to go, and I really didn't care, and I needed help, and I knew there was something wrong, but I didn't know it was alcohol, and I didn't know it was the drugs. See, alcohol and drugs are not my problem. They're my solution to a deeper underlying problem. And I was raised up in the church. My grandmother's father was my great-granddad is a Methodist minister. And I loved going to church with my grandmother. So I went, and I didn't really understand as a kid. But once I started to understand, this ain't for me. And I put God up on a shelf. And I didn't want anything to do with that mean, angry, lightning bolt striking God, hellfire and brimstone, and the God that gave kids cancer, and the God that this and that. And I saw all the negativities. I didn't see any of the blessings, because that's where my mind was, and I was trapped in that state of mind. And so when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and God came up in the steps, fuck it, I'm doomed. Sorry. Did it again. Uncle Dave with the potty mouth. Just don't let Uncle Dave babysit. Your kids will come home with some bad habits. So when I saw that in the steps, I knew I was doomed and this wasn't going to work for me. And just one more time, I was going to fail. And I asked this guy to sponsor me, who I was getting loaded with, his stepson, and he was a science teacher. Kind of got a thing for teachers. They're kind of like friends and, you know, family. And he was crazy. He looked like Christopher Lloyd with the hair straight up, and he taught science, you know. I thought he stuck his finger in a light socket or something. And he was married to one of my mom's friends that where she worked at, and we were all one big family. And he was crazy. as long as I wasn't as bad as he was, I was going to be okay. And so I didn't really have a God, and I just parroted everything I heard, and I mimicked, and I acted as if, you know, they used to say that in the rooms, and I really didn't have anything. You know, it was a facade, it was an act, it was the best I could do with what I had at that time. And I did all the way up to step 9, and when I hit step 9, I'm like slamming them brakes on. I'm not saying sorry to nobody, because it's all your fault. If my mom and dad would just leave me alone, if this, and if the teachers, and if, you know, and I blamed everybody else for my problems, because I couldn't see that it was me. I was the problem. And I went through the Victory House through the AWARE program, and I was in a sober living, and I checked myself in, because the problem was so bad that I even noticed. Bob Turk says that all the time, you know. And man, it was summertime, it was hot, there was no air conditioner. I went through all that, and instead of doing step work and working with my sponsor, I was in the pool hall, and I was hanging out with friends, and then I met her, because we were going fishing on the weekends, and she showed up on the pier one night. I'm looking around, is my ex-wife in here anywhere? Any future ex-wife in here? Because I'm going to go that way. So, and I met this is the second failed marriage that I would go through. I was already divorced once with two kids. My kids were making better decisions than I was at that time. And they were more mature. They're still more mature than I am to this day. And I was going fishing, and I was playing pool, and I was doing everything but Alcoholics Anonymous and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I bet you can guess what happened next. I moved out of state, Las Vegas, because people don't drink in Las Vegas, you know. I started working for my cousin. I was doing union plumbing up there. And I was going to meetings up there, and they don't do meetings like we do in California. If you clap, they go, oh, you're from California, you're from L.A. And how did you know? And I was on a job site one day, and I saw these guys, and they were throwing these keys around to each other, and then they would go in the blue box. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And then my buddy tossed me the keys one day, and there was a little kegger on it, and he goes, go in the bathroom. And I opened it up, methamphetamine, and I'm off and running. You know, I snapped a beer open. At lunch, I guzzled that beer before I even knew what was happening, and I'm doing methamphetamine again, and now I'm off and running, and Vegas almost killed me. The people I was hanging around with were neo-Nazi skinheads. They were stealing shit. They stole my car one night. I'm doing security, and they stole my car, and my buddy goes, hey, there goes your car. I'm like, yeah, right. It was actually my car going by me. Great security guard, right? I dropped him off at a bar one night. They threw me a big bag of dope and said, come pick us up around 12, 1 o'clock or whatever. I get a call that night, come get us, come get us. And throw me another big bag of dope and said, you never saw us tonight. Well, I found out that my best friend up there's brother murdered somebody, and he lured them out to the desert, and it was a big thing. He goes, so I'm like, you know what? If I don't get up and out of here, I'm going to end up in fucking prison and or dead. And death would have been the easy way out up there. So I was into some really bad shit, hanging out with some people that I had no business hanging out with. And I called my parents. There's some other things that happened. The Henderson Police Department kicked my door in. They were looking for my second wife for felony grand larceny. I mean, we were in a lot of trouble for things that were going on. And I called my parents and I got up on a plane and I said, look, I can't tell you over the phone what's going on. I'll tell you when I land. I land in Burbank, and I had been looking for a bag of dope that I had hidden a long time ago and could never find, and it was under my watch. And I went through the airport security and everything, and I see something sticking out, and I'm like, holy. So I'm off and loaded. I'm hanging out with the same people that I left to get away from, and I'm right back in the mess that I'm in, and I'm more broken than I was ever before, and I don't know what to do. And in June of 2000, I show back up at the Burbank group, and my sponsor was there. I nudged him outside. I asked him if he would sponsor me again, and he asked me a really important question. He said, Dave, are you willing to do the work? And I told him no. And he told me that that was the first honest thing that he heard come out of my mouth in years. Now, him and my mom were best of friends, and he kept telling my mom, kick his ass out of the house and quit babying him. And I'm a mama's boy, I'm an only child, and I used my mom's love against her. I would call her and say, you know, I haven't eaten in days, and I spent all my money on drugs and alcohol. And then it would cause her and my dad to get in a fight. And, you know, they say no regrets in AA, but the one thing I did is I wished I would have treated my parents better. You know, I put them through fucking hell for no reason. And they didn't deserve that. They loved me. They did the best they could with what they had. And I went back down. I sat inside the room. My sponsor was sitting just like this, staring at me across the room. And I'm like, what the hell is he smiling about? And I'm starting to like tear up, choke up. Something's happening and I haven't got a clue what's going on. I start bawling and I'm snotting. I'm talking ugly cry and everything's in a whirlwind. And I feel like I'm going to pass out. And I nudged him back outside and I'm like, I'm willing to do the work now. And he goes, yeah, I thought so. He knew what was going on right along. And I guess June 2nd of 2000, God had his hand on my shoulder because I never wanted to quit drinking or using. You know, the claw marks on everything that I gave everything away. I didn't lose nothing. I didn't care about it. It didn't mean anything. It just, hey, whatever. I walked away from marriages, you know. It's like, you can have everything. I don't, clothes on my back, I'm gone. You know, nothing really mattered. And I made a pact with him that I would do whatever it took from that moment forward. And whatever he asked me to do, if it meant cleaning these cracks on this floor with a toothbrush, I'd be down there doing it. And he reminded me of that several times after. Remember that day you said? This is one of those days, Don. Okay. I'm forever grateful for that man because he helped me build a life. And not only did he help me build a life, he helped me find a God that I could believe in. So we're getting back to this God thing. And I'm like, oh, really? Because I thought I'd neatly put him on the shelf. He was never coming back off. And I could just squeak by that part. And he's like, no, Dave, it doesn't work that way. He told me that a lot. So what he had me do is he had me, we met weekly. We read the book. And I took the steps how they came up in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the only way I know how to do it. I do it with my guys. We got to that third step. We did a formal third step. But what he had me do is he had me get a yellow legal pad of paper and make an attribute list of a God that I would want, that I could believe in. And he said, look, just get rid of that other God. It doesn't work for you. This is going to be your God. And what I want you to do is I want you to get on your knees for 2 weeks and I want you to pray to this piece of paper, to this God. That's corny. That's hokey. That's like, really, Don? remember that day you told me? So I'm like, all right, I'll try it. And I started doing it. And at the end of that 2 weeks, I realized that I wasn't high, and I didn't want to be high, and I wasn't drunk, and I didn't want to get drunk. And I felt something different. And I didn't know what it was, because I'm new again in sobriety. And he had me start on my fourth step at that point. And I got to be honest with me for the very first time. I got to see me as the problem and not you. And I started doing this fourth step, you know, in the columns. And I'm resentful at. And I got to the fifth step, you know, and we went in his backyard and he drank probably a pot of coffee. I don't suggest if you're new, drinking a pot of coffee before you do your fifth step. It's hard enough and it's nerve-wracking as enough. But that's what I did. That's my experience. And you know what? I dumped all that baggage in his backyard in Shadow Hills, and I've never had to pick it up to this day. It still remains buried there wherever. And nothing I ever shared with him ever surfaced around the rooms. And 6, 7, 8, and I got to that ninth step again. And this time, I got to make real amends. And they told me to quit saying I was sorry. They said, Dave, we know you're sorry. You're an Alcoholics Anonymous. That isn't good enough. That doesn't cut it. You need to change your behavior. You need to correct what you've made wrong to the best of your ability. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, and then they gave me the, you know, when you amend the Constitution speech, they change the Constitution. They don't say, I'm sorry, this doesn't work anymore. So I got to go to all these people, to the first ex-wife that I wanted to shoot in the face, and make honest amends. And I got to go to my parents and not only make amends, but pay back money that I borrowed recklessly. Now my sponsor told me, Dave, you need to keep little Dave, we'll say, for the kid's sake, in your pants, quit borrowing money recklessly, and he just filleted me out that day, and grow the F up. And I'm like, he said, how old are you? And I was like 37 at the time. He goes, start acting like it. And I'm like, and this is the only guy that ever talked to me like this. Anybody else, we'd be fighting. And I'm like, you're right. You're right. You know, and I got to honestly go and start paying back monies that I owed and start taking care of my parents. Now, little did I know that God was setting me up for something greater. Had I had the hindsight to see God working in my life, I got to take care of both my parents. My mom passed in 2004. I moved back in with them so that they could take care of me. So I thought. But that's not what God had. And then when my mom passed, I had to... No, I didn't have to anything. I got to take care of my father. Now, I got scars to prove that my father and I were on opposite ends of the spectrum. And that man became my best friend. And he'd go and tell... I'd take him to lunch every day, and I never let him pay for lunch. And I was making good money at the time, and I could afford it. And even if I couldn't, I would have afforded it. And I got to sit and listen to this man tell the waitresses, this is my son Dave. He takes really good care of me. Fucking heartbreaking. Sorry, young man. I should be a truck driver for a living. With my vocabulary, it's like, you know, my dad passed in 2013. I knew I was going to be homeless at that point. I'm making good money. I don't know why my head goes there, but it does. I was going under the bridge where all the homeless people in Burbank go, and I had people there, and I knew people, and I'm going to go look for my place that I'm going to stay. And my sponsor was Dan Dominguez at the time. And Dan said, you're not going to be homeless. And then my buddy Jerry, my best friend, dude, stop thinking like that. We're not going to let you be homeless. Yeah, you guys say that, but And when my dad passed away, Dan took me in, and a good friend of mine had just moved out, and he had an open bedroom. It's funny how God just moves people around, and it was like, boom, right in, and he helped me move in. And then, here's where the tragedies start. Dan ended up with bladder cancer. And this guy was a two-time felon and loved to fight, and he was a badass. And you guys know Danny Trejo? Danny's a family friend, and Danny looked up to Dan Dominguez. And Danny Trejo used to provide protection for Charlie Manson. So that has to tell you something right there. And this guy that was larger in life, and he was my best friend, he was my sponsor, and he was like a brother. I mean, like a brother that I never had, that I always wanted, started shriveling up, losing his hair, and I got to take care of him. And I got to bury him with dignity. And then my other buddy, MJ, who we're all very close to, suddenly passed at work one night, had a heart attack, and slumped over in one of the booths and died. And I got to bury him with dignity. And then I had a second sponsor, Dave Brock, and he got colon cancer, and he passed. And I'm like, man, how much can one person take of tragedies? So then in 2011, my son jumps off a two-story roof and commits suicide. Fractures his skull, breaks his back, and lives. But for the first 4 hours, we didn't know if he was alive or dead. And to go and see a crime scene tape up on your kid's apartment building, and you can't get in, and the cops are like rushing at you, stop, 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 and the ambulance is driving away. And it was just one thing after another after another. Where are you? SC Hospital. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous and being firmly grounded in the Burbank group, there were 50 people in those rooms all supporting me. Wow, that's right. And I had to tell them, hey guys, I love you, but there's other people in here grieving. And there's other people that need these rooms and stuff. And I kept my sponsor, and I kept just a few core people with me, and sent everybody home. And the love, just the outpour of love, is just like, wow. And he survived, and he was in a coma for a little over 3 months. He had to learn to walk and talk again. Now, if you met him today and I didn't tell you that, you wouldn't know. That kid lost more than I ever had. And he was borderline genius, computer whiz. I mean, he was fast-tracking in the computer industry. He's all over Google, and he's done some amazing stuff. And they had to remove his frontal cortex, so he has no short-term memory. So he has all his core memories, but anything like what we just had for dinner, he wouldn't remember. We go to the movies every Tuesday, And he's fully functional. He just can't remember stuff, so you can't leave him alone. And he's such a lovely young man. I mean, you just can't help but to love him and everybody that meets him. Had it not been for Alcoholics Anonymous and the Burbank group, I would have never been able to get through these things. And then, you know, I've been to some weddings and some people that have had babies, and there's some real blessings in Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the blessings was that I had all those people around me, and they became family, and to this day they're still family. You know, for a minute there I'm like, I don't want to get close to anybody because they all keep passing away. And I told my sponsor, now my sponsor is Vicki Francis, she goes, you got to stop saying that all your sponsors die if I'm going to sponsor you. I'm like, okay. If you want to see me really at myself out in the wild, come down to the Tuesday Candlelight in Burbank. We bang on tables. It's a Rule 62 meeting. the meeting is really solid. It's a really good meeting after the break, but we goof around and, you know, we don't take ourselves seriously in here. Look, we're all going to die. Nobody's getting out of this life alive. So why worry about tomorrow? Take care of today and tomorrow will take care of itself. I don't have time to worry. I don't, you know, I do security for a living. I'm an armed watch commander. In 2000, I was not emotionally stable enough to carry a firearm on my side daily. And now I'm going for my CCW, which is my concealed carry permit. I've been licensed for years. I run a company at night. I have about 40 cars under my belt at night in a dispatch center. And if you would have told me that I could do this back then, I would have never believed you. And every step of the way, God has prepared me for the next step. You know, it was very nerve-wracking, never doing that and then going and qualifying and doing all the things I got to do to get a license and to keep my license and then running a company and, you know, and my bosses look up to me today. They trust me today. And it's like, are you sure you know me? Are you sure you've met me? You know, because the old guys, I still have that memory of that guy. I never thought I could act professional. And it's funny, the work me doesn't cuss. The work me is like super professional. And then the this me, I'm really having to edit myself and keep myself in check because, like I said, I should have been a trucker. What an amazing journey. I found a life in Alcoholics Anonymous acceptable to me and is doable, you know. They've never asked me to do anything that was too hard or you know, that I couldn't do. I'm about being of service. You know, they taught me early on, those guys that were telling me, hey, go shake everybody's hand that walks through the door. So to the newcomer, get a commitment. I'm not telling you what to do because you don't have to do anything you don't want to in here. That's the good part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can do whatever I want. And we don't all share the same God. My God's personal to me. And what works for me might not work for you. It might get you drunk. But give yourself a chance. Find a group of people. Click up with them. You know, I got lucky and I fell into just some amazing people and we've had to hold each other up, you know, and I watched Diana go and get her master's degree and become a teacher and you know, her husband Sean, we play poker together and he's got some, you know, very, very good skills in the sound industry and watch Sam come in and Doug come from New York. He says he's not from Jamaica, Queens, but we're kind of wondering. He's from the Bronx, you know. And my mom was raised up in the Bronx and born in Connecticut. And I'm starting to like New York people a little bit, you know. I'm just very grateful that these people will put up with me for the longest. The Tuesday night candlelight is near and dear to me. It's one that my buddy MJ and I shared and chaired over the last couple years and throughout his life. And I found that commitments for me kept me coming. If I had to be there to make coffee, I was important. You guys counted on me to make the coffee every week, and I had to be there no matter what. And I changed my work schedule just to make it to a meeting or whatever. And I've just met some amazing people along the way. How am I doing, Diana? Done? Done? I did this? All thanks to a greater, higher power. I've returned to that childhood faith. My God knows He's my God. He loves me as much as He loves you. And you know how I know He loves you? I saw your picture on his refrigerator.